This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay, formerly known as Sit and Stay, 82 feet above sea level, at Intergalactic Get Me the Hell Out of Here Studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 kelvins to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Is it working? Can you feel it? Is it working, Murder Dog? Yay! Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Jeremy, and I'm here tonight by myself. Well, not completely by myself. I got Murder Dog by my side. That's always a good thing. What's up, everybody? This is going to be a bit of a different episode. Obviously, as you can tell, I'm here by myself, and I'm actually probably going to use this jointly as an episode for one of my other podcasts. Yes, one of the many others. My solo show, Abolitionist Abstractions. I actually need an episode for this week, so I'm probably going to steal this and use it there. But anyway, I'm here now, and this is The Fiends, so let's get rocking and rolling. And oh yeah, of course, as always, we are covered by a BIP Got No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at bipcot.org. All right. So anyway, as I said, it's Jeremy. I'm back. And I actually had a plan to do a solo episode before we went off the air, or at least stopped doing the live shows. Lucender had started doing a couple of them. The first one, I think, was completely by accident. His host, I think it was not so young anymore, Nick, just wasn't able to show up that night. So he ended up doing a completely solo episode on the air. It was fantastic, was very well received. And of course, Michael immediately said, hey, if Lou could do it, why can't other people do it? And I immediately said, I could do one of those. I do these things all the time. I do my own podcast all the time. Although when I do my own podcasts, I usually completely shoot from the hip. There's no set time limit. We're not worried about radio. We're not worried about the FCC. We're not worried about any of those things. So when I said that kind of flippantly, I didn't think it all the way through. But then Lou did a couple more of them, and I really actually had one prepped, and I was going to be bringing you one that I had planned to do on my boy Lysander Spooner. From possibly a different angle than we've covered on the show before, because I know in the past a number of us have referred to his work, No Treason, The Constitution of No Authority, and we've brought him up in reference to his American Letter Mail Company. But he's a very interesting character, and there's a bunch of stuff that I wanted to get into with him about him. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen tonight. Only because, well, my life keeps getting in the way, and well, it's interesting in terms of liberty as far as I'm concerned, because one of the last shows I did, the one with a friend of the show and Superfiend fan Paulie Gordon, Michael's one critique that he gave me afterwards was, great show, but try to stick a little more liberty in there so you don't sound like a bunch of druggies. Because, well, in that show, we ended up talking extensively about our experiences with different psychoactive drugs and whatnot. And listening back, I was like, yeah, I see what he's saying. So we're going to try to cram a whole bunch of liberty down your hole tonight. But it's going to be in terms of my horribly sad story that is still going on. I am still here as of the time of this recording, April 26th. I am still stuck here in New Yorkistan. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem like it's getting any closer to me getting the heck out of here. And in the vein of trying to, you know, focus a little more on liberty, or, well, the lack thereof, I think my story fits in perfectly. So we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight, and especially because this is going to be a joint project for my own podcast. Well, you know, people who listen over there know the story and are waiting for an update anyway, so this just works out perfectly. So we'll get started. For any of those just joining us or who haven't been paying attention the whole time, the short sum up is last year, actually almost about a year ago. It might have been a year ago today. I'll have to go check Facebook later and see if it shows up on my on this day memories. But almost a year ago to the day, I made a Facebook post that went viral. I had been in extremely bad mood. I was being prevented from getting to my job at the time, which I was still doing. I was still doing my pet sitting thing back then. And despite taking every possible precaution, despite rerouting my day, despite doing everything backwards in order to accommodate what I knew was going to be a problem, because there had been an announcement, we had received phone calls at our houses from the town that they were going to be shutting streets down for the funeral of a agent of the state. And in this particular instance, it was a firefighter from New York City who is an, or was an agent of the state because, well, FDNY is not a volunteer department. They get paid through taxpayer money. So anyway, you know, I was already agitated because these type of things, no matter who it is, the fact that certain government officials get this extra special treatment when they die has always bothered me because, number one, they're getting all of this paid for by the town or county or state or whoever it is. And who actually is paying that? Well, the taxpayers, because all of the friends and family that work in the government as well, they don't actually pay because their taxes come out of the tax money that's already taken from us. You know, it's that whole plugging the surge protector into itself and calling it an electricity thing. That's, you know, when government officials claim they pay taxes, well, your tax money is actually coming out of the tax money that was already stolen from us. So you're just paying from the same trough. It doesn't really work that way. That's not how math works unless, well, you're doing Common Core. Well, then I guess it makes sense. Anyway, so these type of things have always bothered me. And on that particular day, it bothered me even more because, well, like I said, I knew it was coming. I rerouted my day because, unfortunately, one of my stops, one of the dogs I had to visit, was right in the heart of this area that they were shutting down for, you know, for all sorts of traffic. And so I rerouted my day, did everything I could to avoid this mess. They ended up running overtime and, of course, with no notification. And by the time I got down there, things were such a mess. But there was firefighters from all over the place, New York City, Nassau County, just wandering up and down the street, like a four-lane road, a major thoroughfare in the area, wandering up and down it, taking selfies as they were leaving the service. Like a bunch of drunk college kids just wandering the streets after and during Mardi Gras or something. It was ridiculous. And at that point, once I saw that, I was completely incensed because, you know, I've been held up forever. Dogs are waiting. They have to pee. I've got dogs in my car. It's hot. You know, even with the air conditioner running, it's a whole big mess. Once I saw that, I lost it because I was like, this is what we're being held up for. So they can have a party in the middle of the street. Anyway, I made a post. It went viral. And, you know, because I use the word parasite to refer to agents of the state, and a poo storm came down on me, and everybody and their mother wanted me dead. I was reported to every possible alphabet soup agency you could think of, and some other ones that were created on the spot just to report me to, I believe. And the long story short of that is after 5 days of constant death threats on myself and my family, people stalking my house, people harassing me online, everything. News reporters showed up at my house. I did not want to speak to them. I demanded that they leave multiple times. They refused, kept advancing on me. I eventually pulled out a knife that I had been wearing on a sheath and showed it to them when they said after the fourth time and said, you know, we just want a comment. Well, I pulled the knife and said, this is my comment. And then proceeded to put the knife back away and go back to what I was doing. And then, of course, half an hour later, I was arrested for menacing, even though I was on my own property and the news reporter and her cameraman were trespassing, clearly, because, well, I had ordered them off the property multiple times before the knife incident. So anyway, that's what happened. And now here we are a year later. I'm still dealing with it because guess what? The town, the state, the county, everything here in New York is horrible, and they are just doing everything in their power to keep me here. So that catches you up on the beginning if you weren't here. Since then, it's just been, as far as the court situation goes, it's just been a nonstop moronathon. I just a couple of days ago now, I guess this past Monday, was in court for my 12th appearance, not counting the arraignment. Appearance number 12 was part two of the pre-trial hearings. Like, that's as far as we've gotten in a year. We've gotten to the pre-trial hearings because, well, the local government, the law system here has done, again, everything in its power to try to force me, as they do with so many people. They try to force you into a plea bargain. You know, they don't actually want to go to trial with most of this stuff. They don't want to waste their time. They just want to get as many people into the system as possible, put the fear in you, and then convince you that you're in a position that you can't win. So your best option is to take this plea deal. whatever the plea deal is. And in most cases, most people will jump on it because they want it to end. And or they don't have the money to keep fighting it. Or they don't trust the public defenders to do the job for them. Now, I understand all of these things. And I used to see this on a smaller scale around here. And it never really put two and two together until I was forced into the criminal system myself. Because for years here in Nassau County, I've had to deal with the traffic police and their ridiculous court system and everything, and how they constantly just want to ticket people, and they want to get you in there so that you are so overwhelmed that when they offer you this deal, when they say, hey, this is the situation, you have this ticket, and they are worth, you know, they're $100, $200 a piece, and there's surcharges, and then there's charges on the surcharges. They get you in there and get you so rattled that when they say, hey, listen, here's the deal. Oh, yeah, and by the way, on top of all this, there's going to be these points put on your license because, you know, there's only so many points you're allowed to have on your license before we take that permission slip away from you. So they put you in this position and they say, well, now you're facing all this stuff, but here's what we can do for you. Because we're such nice people, we can go ahead and we can knock these, you know, these big bad tickets down to, you know, non-moving violations or silly infractions, and we can knock a bunch of these points off your license, so you'll be safe for a lot longer, but we're still going to charge you the same amount of fines. And, you know, after a couple of rounds of this when I was younger, it didn't take me very long to figure out, oh, all they really care about is the money. Because if they're willing to wipe away these supposedly horrid crimes, like if you receive some $200 plus ticket for running a stop sign, even though you were the only one present other than the cop who pulled you over. There was nobody else at any of the intersections. You were not a threat of hurting or injuring or killing anyone. There was nobody around for you to possibly hurt or kill. If they give you a $200 ticket for that and then tell you, oh, listen, you know, obviously these fines have to be this high because, you know, you could kill somebody in that situation, and we're trying to deter people from doing that. So obviously, if we raise the fines high enough, it'll deter people. Well, sure, that sounds good in theory, but then you get into the courtroom and they tell you, hey, listen, this is what we're going to do for you. We can knock this down, and you're going to end up with a seatbelt violation, but you're still going to owe us $200-something. You know, after a couple of times of that, it's like, oh, yeah, it's not about safety. They just want your money. They literally just want your money. And I've now found, I mean, I should have known this, and I guess on some level I did, but being immersed in it myself, now I realize that that's really all the criminal system around, at least, you know, I'm sure it's the same pretty much everywhere, but around here I now know for sure that that's exactly what it's about. Because here we have this situation. I was clearly on my own property. Even the edited video, which is the only thing that's been presented for evidence in my case so far, which is the video the news crew took of the incident and then edited and made into a news clip. The actual news clip is the only thing that's been presented for evidence, which is clearly edited. I mean, heck, it shows the news reporter jumping from my front door to the front of my garage in a matter of seconds, which is physically impossible if you know the layout of my house. So, you know, even though I was clearly on my property, even their edited video shows that I was clearly on my property and I was just trying to get people to leave my property. I got arrested for this because I'm supposedly the threat to society. But despite this horrible threat that I pose, not only was I given, a low bail, which, I mean, actually, in my situation, it was still high because I had no record before. I've never, you know, I was arrested once when I was 16 and that thing was expunged. So I have no criminal record whatsoever, no history of any of this stuff. And they only gave me bail in the first place. I learned after the fact because the judge that particular day during the arraignment was just nailing everybody because a couple of the public defenders I heard walk out after the fact and mutter, this is insane. Like, you know, they were talking to their clients and I heard them as I was walking by say, I'm really sorry. This shouldn't have happened. Your situation shouldn't even have warranted bail. It never does. I don't know what was up with the judge today. So a whole bunch of us apparently got hit with pretty what would be considered hefty bails. Well, when you shouldn't have gotten any bail, when you should have been released on your own recognizance and then all of a sudden you're hit with a $1,000 bail. Yeah, that's kind of hefty. So Anyway, I was hit with that, but then I was released into the wild and told, oh, you can go wherever you want. You just got to show up for your court dates. So number one, obviously, I'm not that much of a threat. Number two, as I said earlier, this case has now dragged on because I was arrested on May 1st. So again, almost exactly a year from today, May 1st, 2017. My arraignment was the very next day, May 2nd, 2017. My first court appearance after that was 2 days later on the 4th, May 4th, may the 4th be with you, of 2017. So yes, now that we're on April 26th of 2018, almost a year later, I was... I was arrested, arraigned, released on bail, and told to just keep coming back. And then I'm allowed to keep coming back, but going wherever I want. And this thing has just dragged out and dragged out and dragged out. And the DA's office has used every possible stall tactic in order to get my side to ask for adjournments or continuances or whatever the terminology they use on a regular basis. So it looks like we're the ones who are hiding from everything, even though we're not, because our story has been the same since the beginning and we continue to stick through it, even all the way through trial, if it finally ever gets to that point. But anyway, so through this process, I have realized, it's been smacking me in the face that, yeah, this is all about money to them. Because if I was this much of a threat to society... You know, I'm a menace. that's the charge I was given, menacing. But, if I was this much of a threat to society, number one, I wouldn't be released on such a, quote-unquote, low amount of bail. Number two, I wouldn't be allowed to just wander around freely and just show up and, go wherever I want, leave the state, leave the country if I want, as long as I show up for my court hearings. And... the deals, the plea deals they finally got around to offering me, which I mentioned that in regards to the traffic situation here, the way it works here, they give you plea deals for these things. Those they give you right away. In the criminal case, they try to, wear you down a little bit, and they hold off on these plea deals, which is exactly what's happened in my case, because even though one was promised a number of times when I had my first attorney, it never actually showed, the deal never ended up transpiring until... The very last appearance my first attorney was there for, which I, of course, rejected immediately because I had already begun to suspect that this was not about the safety of others. This was not about me being a threat. This was about money. And sure enough, when I got the first plea deal, it was let known to me that I was exactly correct, that this was all about money, because what was the deal they offered? Well, we'll take that big, bad misdemeanor you've got. Oh, sorry, two misdemeanors, because the DA tacked on a second one because, well, they can, even though there was no need for the second one. And without the first one, the second one doesn't exist. It's one of those build upon things that, again, the government, the just us system, as I refer to it, loves to operate. And they're allowed to operate with this type of leeway, which is kind of BS in my opinion. And I don't really understand how anybody can look at the US legal system and call it a justice system. Because this is like the system is set up for this to happen. You can be arrested for any, pick a violation, pick an arbitrary edict that some would-be tyrant had made into law, or some lifelong bureaucrat has managed to get put into as a regulation in the particular alphabet soup agency they work for that now carries the weight of law, and you can be arrested or, as I prefer to say, kidnapped for it. All of these things, they set these up. The system is set up for this, where you can be picked up off the street and, harassed and then kidnapped by some boys in blue over any one of these edicts. And then once you're in custody, the DA's office, the district attorney, has the not only the ability, but the authority and all these other things to just start adding on other charges. And while in most cases, a lot of them are just either redundant or BS, there is a purpose for them. And the purpose is not to punish the guilty. Oh, no, no. It's to take the innocent until presumed guilty individual, or allegedly innocent until proven guilty individual, and pile so much on them that they fear that they have no possible recourse, that they begin to get convinced that, oh my God, I'm going to go to jail for this. I'm going to be taken away from my family. I'm going to lose, you know, I'm going to lose my job, my friends, and all this stuff. They put the fear of this in you so that when they come dangle these plea bargains, which usually they try to, you know, they entice you by saying you're going to avoid jail time, because that's usually what most people fear the most. Is obviously being taken away from their family and friends and being put in jail for an indeterminate or whatever, a determinate amount of time. But a lot of times it's just, well, you'll be in there until we say you're in there. That obviously strikes fear in a lot of people. So they dangle that in front of you that, oh, we'll take away the jail time, but we'll add all this other stuff on. But most people, all they hear is, oh, no jail time? Okay, great, I'll take it. And a lot of people jump on it.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agoristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agoristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agoristhosting.com.
And that's why the system is allowed to continue, because the reality is they trump up all these other charges to put you in this position. So you will take the plea deal, because most of those plea deals do still involve you having to spend some amount of money to give to the state, where, back to the traffic thing, it's all about revenue generation. And this was proven to me in my specific case when the aforementioned plea deal that took forever to come down finally came down. And guess what? It was all about the money. Even though I am now technically facing two misdemeanor charges, because the DA, on top of the menacing charge, the DA tacked on criminal use of a weapon, which doesn't exist without the first one, because the weapon in question, even according to the police on the scene, was perfectly legal for me to be carrying. It's just the fact that I dared showed it to somebody on my own property who wouldn't leave after repeated demands to do so. But other than that, it's a perfectly legal knife. It's under the, you know, the quote unquote legal limit they've set for lengths of knives here in the state of New Yorkistan. So it's a BS charge, but its design is to get me in a position where I'm like, oh no, now I'm facing two charges. Oh no, the maximum penalty is a year in jail for each. So, oh no, I'm facing a possibility of 2 years in jail. That's what they want people to think. Even though, again, in my particular situation, completely clean record, no priors, none of this stuff. In every other circumstance, this would be like an open and shut case that even if I was found guilty, like, the reality is jail shouldn't be a possibility. Like, probation would be the most likely, which is another BS thing I'm gonna get into in a little bit. I'll try to bookmark that and remember that that I need to get back to that, this situation with probation around here. But that's what it is. They want to be able to scare people, because it's like, oh no, you're gonna go to jail. Well, we can keep you out of jail by doing this. So, you know, the deal that I was offered, and I think I may have talked about this on the air before, I'm not sure, but I've been advised so many times by different people that I shouldn't be talking about this stuff, but I don't even care anymore. It's been over a year. This is just insane. And I think I've let this loose anyway before, so I'll just repeat it now. But the deal they offered after all this stuff was, you know, obviously the second charge that the DA tacked on will magically get wiped away just as magically as was put there in the first place. And the second charge, or the original charge of menacing, oh, we can just knock that down to a disorderly conduct. So it's just a violation. It's not even a misdemeanor. Nothing you have to worry about. This won't show up on your record. You know, if you go to apply for a job, you don't have to put this down, because most applications ask if you've been convicted of a felony. Some of them will ask if you've been convicted of a misdemeanor. In this case, I would have nothing to worry about, because you've only been convicted of a violation. So don't worry about it, sir. But in order for you for us to give you this wonderful deal, we're just going to have to ask for a few things in return. Number one, because of your situation, you're going to have to attend anger management classes. Now, on its face, this seems silly to me, but I also understand why it's used, because a lot of situations, people are upset when things happen to them, so they look like an extremely angry person, although in my case, I am an angry person. We've talked about this plenty. I'm the angry young man, or not so young anymore, but hey, you know. So, like, on its face, I can kind of sort of see that as, like, a way to, you know, especially if you've threatened somebody or you've threatened to injure somebody or you've even injured somebody in a hostile manner, not an accident of any kind, and that person is worried that you're now going to be back on the street, well, sure, I can understand that having that person go through some kind of anger management to say, hey, listen, this person's, he's got some better tools in his belt now. He won't be as angry anymore. Again, in theory, I understand that. In practice, it's horrible because, number one, most of these things are just BS. Most people just go through them, sit through them, and want their paper signed at the end and don't give a rat's behind about the techniques they're taught. I would probably fall into that camp. But even worse, what I found out in this situation is I would be charged for these classes. I would have to pay a fee in order to attend the classes. Now, I can't be sure because I haven't looked into it, but I'm willing to bet that somehow, some way, the town of Hempstead or the county of Nassau somehow gets a percentage of that fee, even though it's supposed to be, you know, used for the person performing the anger management class. If they're not a straight town employee or a county employee who's hosting that class, then I am almost positive that even an independent contractor would still be giving a percentage back to the state for this money. So they want their money. The second condition was that I would have to do an undetermined, yet to be determined rather, amount of community service. Well, again, community service on its face, I don't have a problem with. Volunteer work, not at all. I worked, my uncle used to run a restaurant back in the day, and he used to do soup kitchen type stuff on different holidays, and I would always go help out in those. And I've done other volunteer work when it comes to animals in the past, and I would be more than happy to do some in the future. I've actually been talking with one of my friends who's helping out with another friend of hers who's started a rescue around here, and I've actually donated a bunch of stuff, and I've discussed doing some volunteer work with them before I get out of here. And of course, also, if I'm forced into doing some type of volunteer work, I ask them if they'd be willing to let me come work with them, because, you know, they're nice, the town, the county, they're nice enough to let you pick where you do your service a lot of the times. I mean, obviously, you can't just do it anywhere. It has to be a county-approved place. But I've looked into doing that already, and I, like I said, I've done it in the past. I probably will do it in the future. I have no problem with volunteer work. I mean, I talk about all the time how in a free society, when people say, well, how would you feed the poor? Well, you bring back the voluntary charities that used to be kicking butt before the government got in the way in the first place and started all these other agencies and then convinced people that their private charity was no longer needed, so that generations and generations of people grew up and didn't contribute as much privately because they figured, hey, the government's got it covered. Even though when you look at the numbers from pretty much any government agency when it comes to like some type of welfare, you realize that, you know, I think it's some ridiculous like 10% or less of the funds that go to any one of these departments actually goes to the people in need. The rest, you know, the 90%+ rest of it is all for administrative BS, and it doesn't actually get to the people. So, you know, private charities, that's where it's at. It's where it used to be until government said, no, you can't do that anymore. You need to jump through all these hoops because we're the ones who can provide it for everybody. So, like I said, I don't have a problem with charity at all. I think it's a great thing. And I've been very lucky through this whole situation that people have donated to me and my family because of the situation we've been put in. And I'm extremely grateful for that. So, you know, voluntary charity, I have no problem with. What I do have a problem with is, number one, being ordered to do this charity work. So I'm being told, under the ultimate threat of, well, when it comes to most government laws, under the ultimate threat of death, because if I resist doing this and then they try to come put me back, try to put me in a cage again and I resist going in the cage, well, then they are, quote unquote, allowed to shoot and kill me. So under the ultimate threat of death, I would be forced to give my labor away. that in itself is a big problem for me because, well, it goes against my principles. But on top of that, I also learned that they charge you a fee to do the community service. There is something ridiculous like a per hour fee charge that you have to pay for every hour of community service that you've done. So not only are you expected, or not only are you forced to give your labor away for free, you are then told that after you were forced under the ultimate threat of death to give your labor away for free, you have to pay a fee to have given. So you actually have to pay to have done work that you are not getting compensated for. And again, I didn't look all the way into the numbers, but you got to believe that most, if not all, of that fee money is going directly to the town of Hempstead or the county of Nassau. In either case, it's going back into the government coffers. Why? Because they're generating revenue. So here we go. I've been given this wonderful plea deal where they're going to spare me the need to go to a trial and spare me the possibility of me being taken from my kids and put in jail for 2 years, only if I go ahead and plead to something else I didn't do and then accept these conditions, which so far the first two conditions have included more money. Condition number three, I'll let you guess, it might have something to do with... Guess what? Money, of course, because the third condition in my situation was an undisclosed amount of fines. Not only was it undisclosed, and now we're just talking straight money versus, you know, do this work and we're going to charge you for it. Take these classes and we're going to charge you for it. No, this is straight, just give us money. On top of those, there's also surcharges on top of those fines. Now, I never got a money figure on any of this because, of course, despite being handed the same crappy deal multiple times, they never disclosed how much the fines would be. I was never notified how much the fees are for these other things that I have to pay. But in the end, it doesn't matter because to me, I just look at it and say, it's BS. It's all about revenue generation. You can see it very clearly. That's all they care about. You know, I'm clearly not a threat to anybody in this community as I was deemed to be originally, because number one, like I said, I've been allowed to walk the streets freely with just having to pay the bail originally, and I'm allowed to come and go and do as I want, and you know, nobody's in danger at any one time, and the DA's office has dragged this out as long as they possibly can in hopes that I will finally cave and take their deal. Because like I said, every time this deal finally got offered, even though it was supposed to be offered, I think after the second appearance, they had told my attorney at the time that they would be coming with an offer soon. And that offer didn't come for months after that because they purposely waited until like minutes before the last court date, the next court date, after they offered it or they said they were going to offer it originally, to play some games and claim that they, you know, they needed more time now, or something else came up, and then they've actively ducked both of my attorneys on numerous occasions after telling them, oh yes, we'll get together next week and try to work something out. And then they purposely ignore phone calls and then wait and wait and wait and then don't have any contact with my attorney until right before we go into the courtroom. You know, all these stall tactics. So clearly, I'm not a threat to anybody. Clearly, this is all about the money. And that's all that, you know, all they really want. And that's the way it is with most of the so-called legal system. It's not about your safety, folks. It's not about putting the bad people away. Although sometimes it happens. You know, sometimes, say, a murderer, somebody who's actually murdered somebody, somebody who's actually raped somebody, somebody who's actually stolen property from someone and not returned it. Like, sometimes, I mean, these things happen. And sometimes these people get caught. And sometimes these people go through the system. And sometimes they are punished for the crimes that they committed. But number one, even in those situations, a lot of the time, no victim is being made whole. You know, even in robbery cases, people get their stuff stolen. You know, oh yeah, we caught the guy. Oh yeah, he's going to jail. He's going to spend X amount of years in jail. Woohoo! And then you talk to the victim. Well, did you get your stuff back? No. Is there any talk of getting your stuff back? No. So has justice been served? Most people blindly go, yeah, the guy's in jail. It's like, well, no, the victim's still the victim. The victim's not been made whole. That's why in a, you know, free society, I would much prefer to see justice, you know, systems of justice and legal systems or whatever you're going to call them, be built around the idea of restitution versus, you know, versus just throwing somebody in a cage and saying you're being punished. Because, you know, that's how you make that. That's how you make a situation better. Somebody steals, you know, your purse and you have all your, you know, all your worldly possessions in there. Or they steal your wallet. They steal, you know, they steal your money and you're left with nothing. Well, yeah, the guy going to jail, that's great. He won't be able to do it to somebody else. But what about me? What about my money? You know, in a just system, there would be restitution. The person wouldn't be put in jail. I mean, they might be if the community around them deems them to be like incorrigible, like they just keep doing this no matter how many times we try to get restitution from them. They end up going to steal from somebody else, or they end up doing this to somebody else. Like, you know, now we have to think about getting this person out of the community permanently. You know, that's down the road. But in the interim, like the first, you know, the first time it happens, putting them in jail doesn't do anything for the victim, but having that person do some type of work to pay back, or at least give, you know, if they can't give back directly what they stole, work it off, you know, that's a much more fair system. That's a much more just system, because now instead of being locked in a cage and being told you need to think about what you did because you're now being separated to society and you can't come back to society until you think about what you've done and we let you out of here. Instead of doing that as a form of punishment, which, you know, should be able to be well known by just about any study you see all across the world, like the rates of recidivism in a lot of these cases are very high, because just putting somebody in jail for X amount of years and then kicking him back out into society doesn't do anything to change the person's perception of what is right and wrong and what they should be allowed to do and whose property they should be allowed to touch. It doesn't change anything for them. If anything, it makes it worse, because now they've been removed from society even longer. They feel like even more of an outcast. They feel like they have even less of a choice but to act on their instincts, which is how they got in that place, got in that situation in the first place. Versus a system of restitution where you may hold, the individual may be held somewhere for some certain amount of time, but they're actively working to pay the individual back that they have wronged. Well, that sends a very strong message that not only are you, you know, you're not just being punished for what you did, but you're actually being made to work that, you know, and then you're doing free labor. You're working and giving away the fruits of your labor to pay back what you've, you know, to try to restore the individual, the victim, to as close to whole as possible. That goes a lot, you know, that goes a whole lot longer with people actually having to go through the process of having worked and not get compensated for it and realize that all that work is going to somebody else. That's a pretty strong incentive for people not to do it again. I mean, hey, look at all the communists out there, or the so-called communists out there, that scream all the time about the wage slavery and having to work for the man and how horrible it is. You got to believe that most people would not be thrilled with this proposition. I mean, heck, I was just talking about it before, about how I have absolutely no problem with voluntarily giving my work, my labor away for free if I choose to.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert, so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers, so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride-sharing that allows for payment in any form: crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com. Mm.
But being forced to, under the threat of more violence, it's a whole different story. It just makes me mad, and it makes me want to get through what I have to get through just to get it over with, not because it's going to make anybody else better off or not because I'm going to learn a lesson, just because I want it over with. So, you know, restitution is a much better system. And, you know, in this particular case, in my particular case, you know, is there any restitution possible? Well, for me, you would think, because I'm the one who keeps getting screwed here. People came onto my property, refused to leave my property, and then I'm the one who's being punished for it. You know, that's not justice, people. You know, but even if we had a more just system, like, you know, if somehow this managed to happen in a just world, then how would you compensate these so-called victims of my aggression? I didn't even come anywhere near them. I said some words. Like, you know, how do you make somebody whole who's been scared? You know, it's silly. That's really what it comes down to. That's how silly this whole thing is. Unfortunately, I can say silly right now, but in reality, it's not, because this is my life that's on the line, you know, and I'm still having to go through all this stuff because, well, the state, it just wants its darn money. You know, like I said, that's what's become very, very obvious to me through all of this, is that's all this is about. It's just about the money. Because they, you know, fines, charges for this, charges for that, you know, whatever. It's just all about getting the money for them. So I'm clearly not a threat, because they would not allow me to roam freely and just let me keep walking after every court appearance if I was a danger to anybody. You know, the town, the county, the judge, the DA. Well, I'm not sure about the judge yet, but the DA, pretty much everybody else is also aware of the fact that I am actively trying to leave this state. That I'm trying my hardest to get my family the heck out of here. Number one, because I hate this place. But number two, in this particular situation, this means that I'm definitely not a threat to anybody around here, because I don't want to be here. But unfortunately, like I said earlier, the legal system, the court system, is not the only thing that's holding me here. The other thing that's still trapping me here at the current moment is trying to actually sell my house. And that has also been an absolute nightmare. And not only has it been a nightmare, but every single roadblock. I was thinking about this the other day, because at first I said it flippantly and just said, oh, it's all government's fault, because, you know, I'm wont to say things like that. But when I really started to get down and think about it, I was like, well, hold on. Wait a minute. This really is, like, everything I've run into, every problem, every roadblock, you know, everything that we have run into that has kept the sale of this house from going through, which it should have gone through already. Like, it should have been done weeks ago. But every single thing that has kept us from selling the house has had to do with government, whether it was directly the government, the local government, getting in our way, or it was some regulation that some other entity believed they had to follow, which in turn kept us from doing things. Those regulations were put in place by some government, whether it was the state government, the federal government, whatever. Every one of these problems has been a government problem. So I know some people originally thought that, you know, even my real estate attorney tried to accuse me of playing victim early on when I kept saying, man, all these things keep coming up. This is insane. And he tried to tell me that I was just, you know, playing a little bit of a victim there, because this is quite commonplace. This always happens. You know, there's always holdups, blah, 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 standard operating procedure. You're just going to have to be patient and wait it out. Well, as time has gone on and more BS has been thrown in our path, I even got my real estate attorney to admit the other day that maybe, just maybe, I might have a point about thinking I'm being politically targeted in some way, because of the holdups with this process have just been above and beyond what's considered normal standard operating procedure for the lazy and incompetent people at the town of Hempstead. Because it all started off, you know, I'm still going through this process. Like I said, this has been going on for a year now. And as anybody who's listened to The Fiends or any of my other shows for the years prior to that, you're all well aware that I've been trying to get out of New York for years now. It's just, it all came to a head after the incident last year, even though this was my plan all along. My plan had been to shut down my pet sitting business at the end of this past year and be getting the heck out of here in 2018. That plan was in place even before being arrested, even before the viral Facebook post, months before that. Like, everything had been put in place. It was just a matter of timing. So I've been trying to get out of here. So this all, you know, everything happened. I've been dealing with the court stuff. Once I had, you know, somewhat of an idea of where we were headed with the court thing, I said, okay, well, now I have to officially shut down the business, and then we have to start making plans to sell my house and get the heck out of here. So I attempted for a couple of months to sell it on my own because I, you know, read some things online and found out, oh, you can actually do these things. You just have to do this and this and blah, blah, blah. So I half-heartedly tried to sell my house. I didn't even bother to get it listed, even though I did learn that despite being told by numerous real estate agents who I think were just trying to get my money, I actually can list the house on my, you can list a house on your own. You just have to pay like a couple $100 fee to have it listed on the MLS listing. You know, for a month or 3 months or whatever it is. But I decided to try not to go that route because, well, you know, we have money situations around here and we're trying very hard just to save as much money as we can just to get out of here. So I said, hey, we live on a relatively busy street. I'll just throw a sign out there and see what happens. And a lot of people said, oh, you're crazy. But sure enough, because of where I live, we were getting a couple calls a week, easy. Just by putting a sign in front of our house that said for sale by owner, not listed anywhere. You know, you couldn't find the information about it anywhere else other than driving by my house. And we got a number of calls. And we actually had one guy that I thought we had a deal worked out with. And we were about to start entering, like he had his lawyer ready. I had my real estate attorney ready. And we were about to start going into contract. And then he flaked and bailed just before Christmas, which was disheartening, but I got over it quickly because I realized, okay, well, this, you know, it was too good to be true that I did this all on my own. And then some guy just randomly came by and said, hey, I see your house. Hey, let's work out a deal. And then we shook hands. And then, you know, that would have been way too good to be true. So I was bummed for a little bit. I was upset with the guy because he kind of led me, you know, you can back out of deals like that. That's totally fine. But like when you stand at somebody's house and shake their hand and say, hey, this is the deal I want, let's make this happen. And then you try to pull some BS later on, claiming that there's issues with Christmas bonuses that you have to pay your employees, even though you knew full well that we were talking about not making this deal happen until just after Christmas. Like, you knew the entire time that Christmas was going to come into play. So I think it was BS, but whatever.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
I got over that and said, all right, now we're running shorter on time. I still have this stupid legal thing hanging over my head, but we need to get the house taken care of. We need to, like, I need to sell this because I don't, you know, I can't be paying for it anymore until, you know, we're trying to move. We're trying to relocate, start a new life. We need money for that. We're not going to be staying here. I don't want to keep paying for a house here. We got to get rid of this house. Plus the fact that my daughters and my so-called wife, Jen, I love you. I say that all the time. We're not officially married, but I call her my wife. Whatchamacallit? They have a place to go to. They have a place to stay. So they will be okay. So it's just me that I have to worry about. So if it's just myself and Murder Dog that I have to worry about, we can handle ourselves. We can, you know, we can camp. We could do, you know, we could sleep on couches. We could do whatever we need to do to save money. As long as my kids are taken care of and Jen's taken care of, we're okay. So I was like, that was the position I'm in. All right, we got to sell this house. As luck would have it, one of the clients that stuck with me through all the BS last year and continued using my services even after I had closed my company down is a real estate agent. So I went and talked to her. I said, listen, I need, you know, I tried to do this on my own. I really don't like the idea of giving money to agents in this particular situation. I think it's, you know, no offense to what you do for a living, but I think this is just kind of middleman BS that, you know, isn't necessary. And she looked at me in the eye and said, yeah, you're kind of right. But it is easier this way. And I thought about it for a second. I said, you know what? If I have to give anybody a percentage of the sale of my house, why not give it to her? Not only have I known this woman for 7 or 8 years now, I've cared for her dog. Her dog stayed at my house. She's been in my house. I've known her since like when she first met her husband to them getting engaged, married, having a child, getting more animals. Now they're having more children. It's like I know this family. And because, you know, I have a soft spot because she's currently pregnant with twins, which I have twins. So immediately I'm like, yeah, you guys need the money right now, too. So if I'm going to give it to anybody, I might as well give it to you. So great. I have somebody I trust now as my real estate agent. Even better. So we set off to do this thing. And she tells me at the beginning, you know, the market's starting to turn around here. But it's still obviously, you know, that the market's still not that great. But more likely than not, because of your location, We're only going to have to show the house a couple of times, maybe do an open house or two, but don't worry. Within a couple of months, I will have this place sold for you. So I'm thinking, great, awesome. We get into the process. She sets up a couple of viewings. I think maybe three or four viewings. We never even got around to the open house because after three or four viewings where a couple of them were multiple people coming through and a couple others were just like single families showing up at a certain time or whatever to meet with her and then see the house. Within 2 weeks, she sent me a text message that somebody who had come in the house during one of the viewings when there was multiple families there, the one family that I didn't talk to because I had actually been there through all of them. So they ended up asking me questions and I was going to be honest about the house and what's going on with it and what the situation is. And I was fine answering questions, but the one family who snuck in and out without saying a word to me had actually already made an offer and were solidly committed to wanting to buy the house. 2 weeks. That's all it took. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. So, like, you know, of course, I'm thanking her profusely. And now I know that the deal with mortgages and stuff, that it can take time. And, you know, there are things that can get held up. So just because these people say they want to buy it right now doesn't mean I'm going to be selling my house tomorrow. I was quite aware of that.
Hello, friends. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Do you know about Cell 411? Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone that you can get on the Google Play Store and the iPhone store, wherever you beautiful people get your iPhone apps. Cell 411 allows you to send messages in real time, including video and audio if you want, to friends that you pick ahead of time and set up cells where you can help each other. Could be used for families to help kids not be bullied, so they can call an older sibling or a family friend if they're bullied. Basically, you set up a cell with your friends and family or whoever you want. There's a little wheel on it, and when there's an emergency, you just hit the button of like the appropriate thing, like car broke down, police stop, criminal activity, I'm being pulled over, police interaction, medical emergency, fire, crime in progress, need a ride, ride sharing, anything. You can just call your friends and find them. It sends your GPS coordinates to them and gives turn-by-turn directions so they can get to you as quick as possible. They can also send a message back, yes, I'm coming, and it'll tell how many minutes away they are, or they can say, no, I can't come now. You can stream video and audio to them, which is stored on the Cell 411 servers for a few weeks. So if you get your phone taken away, you still have access to the video that was saved up until the point where your phone was taken away or destroyed. So if bullies, whether they're in uniform or private bullies, steal your phone, whether it's some Antifa or some overly helpful police person who doesn't want to be filmed doing his job for some reason, you'll still have access to this video. So I highly recommend that you get Cell 411. I use it. My wife and I use it. My friends and family use it. Cell 411. Go to getcell411.com or get it on the Google Play Store or iTunes Store. Cell 411 because your friends won't show up and shoot you.
Although in the back of my mind, I also did have when I purchased this house, that memory because I was told the same type of thing when I went to go buy the house 11 years ago that, you know, even if we find the house you like and even if you make an offer and the seller accepts your offer, there's still all these hoops we have to jump through and it could still take months. But then I actually found my house that I'm sitting in still to this day, sit right now as I'm recording this, found this house, saw it, made an offer, had it accepted, and then sat down at the closing, I think less than a month. It might have been 3 weeks from the day that I saw the house. I was closed. The house was mine. So, like, I had that memory in my head, too. Like, yeah, I know it can take, but look what happened to me before. Now, of course, I didn't expect lightning to strike the bottle twice. But, hey, I did have that thought in my mind. So, I was all excited. We start going through the process. You know, okay, they made the offer. You accepted the offer. Now we're going to move forward. Now they have to get their commitment from their bank so they can get their mortgage, even though they were pre-approved for their mortgage. So we sit around and we wait. Now, of course, all of this stuff, all the banking, all the things with the mortgage, all this other stuff, these are all government regulations that are put in place that the banks have to jump through. like even in my situation, I deal with a credit union, not even a bank. My mortgage, all my accounts have been through a credit union because I don't trust banks that much. I don't really like the whole system whatsoever, but credit unions tend to be a little safer. So like all of these things, all the holdups, all the forms that have to be filled out, all the things that have to be done in triplicate, like this is all government regulation. So even though it's a private industry, a private entity making you sign these papers, it's all government. Government has gotten in the way of making what should be a simple transaction. Hey, I would like to leave this location. I have this house and property for sale. Man B, hey, I would like to move to this location. I have some money or some crypto or some, you know, some cows to barter, whatever. Let's make a trade. Oh, you have that crypto and you have this number of cows and you have this money. I will take some of all this. That seems fair to me. What do you think? Oh, that sounds like a fair deal. Let's shake on it. Boom. These are now yours. This property and land and house is now yours. Done deal. The government has taken what should be that simple of a process and made it so insanely just ridiculous. I don't know if insanely, it's like multiple adjectives and adverbs all smashed together, but whatever. Like that's government for you. It flummoxes me sometimes. I don't even know like the depths of its stupidity or its redundancy, which punishes nobody but the people instead of the government itself. But anyway, so I'm dealing with all this and I'm going in knowing this and already seething because of the treatment I've gotten from the government in my criminal case and how I'm being railroaded there and how things are being dragged on. And it's costing me even more money that I don't have to continue to try to prove my innocence, which I'm not supposed to have to do. They're supposed to prove my guilt, but that's apparently not how it works. So anyway, so I'm already dealing with all this and now like, great, now I got to deal with more government BS. But I try to remain calm and say, okay, well, let the banks do their thing and keep going and going. Then we get word that the potential buyer's bank is ready to make the commitment. However, they did a title search on my house and there is a violation for an illegal business on my house. Now I hear this news and go, well, that's odd. Number one, I don't even have a business anymore. I officially closed the business months ago. Number two, I never had an illegal business here. When I started my company way back in 2006, I went and checked. I've talked about this before. I think I even talked about this in one of my intros when I first started The Fiends. One of my first shows with Michael when he was asking me about me was that I was so much of a statist when I first started my company back in 2006 that not only did I go check to see about acquiring some type of permit or license for my business, when I was notified that there was no such permit or license for my business, that my business, as of 2006, fell into what was, and I quote, a gray area, and that quote came from the town clerk at the time and the head of the building and zoning department, two people who I would be intimately connected with if I needed to get a permit or a license, because the town clerk handles all the permits and licenses, and the head of the building and zoning department handles all of the stuff as far as my house if I am now a business and I have to get my house zoned differently. So, like, these are the two people in the town that I should definitely be talking to about this. I did. They told me I was in a gray area and that I should just keep kind of quiet, but keep doing what I was doing because I wasn't actually doing anything wrong. But like I said, I didn't just go to find that out. When I found that out, I actually tried to get permits and licenses implemented. That's how much of a statist I was. That's how much I wanted to follow the rules. That's how much I wanted to make sure that my business was as ironclad as possible, that nobody could take it down over some BS. I wanted to jump through every possible hoop. Not only did I want to jump through every possible hoop, I wanted to create hoops for me to jump through. So, like, I took this very seriously when I started my company, despite the fact that I was, you know, laughed at and mocked a lot by some of my friends early on saying, dude, you want to walk dogs? Really? That's how you're going to make money? And of course, a couple of years later, when I was able to show them what I was doing and how well I was doing, they all just, you know, kind of grumbled and said, fine, you were right. But I wanted to be legitimate when I started out. So I went through all these. I tried to create my own hoops. So for me to be told later, like years later, that I was running some type of illegal business was just insane on its face. But of course, I knew what this was. This was just something else that had been reported during the mass reporting spree after my viral post the year before, because I had been reported to pretty much every agency you could think of. I mean, I was even reported by two people, not just one, by two. Two separate people reported me to the Secret Service for threats against Donald Trump because they found a picture of me wearing a shirt that was actually taken before Trump was elected. But the shirt made by former fiend Davy Barker that says, kill the precedent. Not president, precedent. P-R-E-C-E-D-E-N-T. Clearly says precedent. Two idiots reported me to the Secret Service because they obviously can't spell and thought I was threatening the president. So I knew I had been reported to like just about everything because I had gotten calls or notifications from a lot of different agencies. I had even gotten two letters from the town building and zoning department. However, neither of those was about any illegal business violation. They were about the lack of a permit for the second bathroom, which I was quite aware of. I knew was going to be a problem once I did try to sell the house, but that's something, and I think I've talked about this in the past before. We threw that bathroom together literally as my kids were being born. My dad, a couple of friends, and I were racing to get stuff done because the kid, you know, my girls were born 2 months premature, so we did not have a lot of time to get everything together, and I was literally racing between making sure that Jen was okay at the time, working, and then getting home to do work on the house, and then even after they were born and had to spend the first month in the NICU at the hospital, my friends and I continued every day after I got off of work. And I went to go see the kids for a little bit. I would come back to the house and we would scramble to get this thing put together. So I knew I was going to have to deal with the lack of the permit on the bathroom at some point. That it was bothersome that somebody bothered to report me. So now I had a violation for it versus me just going in and applying and say, hey, I forgot to do this. And, you know, they have a whole process where even if you don't, you know, going back again to the revenue generation thing, if you don't pay, you know, if you don't get the permit right away, it's not like they'll come tell you you got to tear the thing down. No, they'll just say, oh, you didn't apply for a building permit? Well, now we have this wonderful thing called a maintenance permit. So if you just pay a couple of extra dollars, we could forget about the fact that you never got the permit in the first place, and we could just give you a permit right now, even if it's years down the road. You'll just have to pay an additional fee, which is, of course, revenue generation, what the town is so good at. So I had no idea about this business violation. Like I said, I had gotten things in the mail about the bathroom and one about the fence that my dad and I had put in years before too. Again, something I knew, I didn't even know we needed one for. But once it came up, I was like, oh, of course they're going to throw this at us. I know I have to take care of this. But I never received anything about the business violation. So and plus my business was closed, so I no longer thought it was a threat. And on top of that, over the dozen years that I had been running my business, I had been reported to the town on numerous occasions, always anonymously. And I was told in every situation, the first time by the head of the building department herself at the time, and subsequently by a number of building inspectors who came to my house to check it out after there had been reports, I was told by every one of them that I wasn't doing anything wrong. They didn't see anything out of the ordinary, and they were signing off as there was no problem at this address. So I had no reason to think anything would come differently of this. Well, of course, this is the town of Hempstead. This is Nassau County, and I'm already being harassed through the criminal system, through the legal system. Why not throw some more stuff into the mix? So, of course, now that the title search has been done and this thing pops up on the title search, it's like, well, now we got to go take care of this. So what do I do? I don't know. My real estate attorney contacts me and says, listen, this came up on the title search. Now, these are his words, but don't worry about it. We're just going to wait another couple of days. They'll run another search, and then we'll figure out what we got to do. Okay. So, you know, deferring to the experts here, I do so. Few days later, I receive a panic-stricken text from my attorney telling me, you need to take care of this right away. It's still there. Blah, blah. I'm like, now I'm confused. You just told me to sit back and wait. Now you're telling me I got to jump, but all right. So then, now, of course, I get this message at 7 o'clock at night. There's nothing I could do because the town offices are closed. So the very next morning, I get on the phone right away because on top of everything else, the building inspectors are available every day for you to talk to between the hours of 9 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. Yes, you've got that right. You've got an hour and a half window every day to talk to these people. There are, I don't even know how many people in the town of Hempstead. There's over a million here in Nassau County. So in the town of Hempstead, I'm going to guess there's so at least 250,000, maybe more. All those people, when they have a building problem, they have an hour and a half. So they have what? What's that? 7.5 hours out of an entire week to be able to get in touch with these people. So obviously these people are always on the phone when they're there because everybody's trying to talk to them. So I get up nice and early to call right away to hopefully get to be one of the first ones, you know, waiting on hold. And as luck would have it, I managed to get through pretty quickly. So I was kind of excited. And I get a guy in the line and I explain the situation. And not only, now these are like, all of these things are surprising events for me because I've been dealing with the town for a very long time and things never go smoothly. So when I get this inspector who not only tells me, oh, yep, I see what the problem is here. Yeah, we can take care of that. You know what? I might actually be able to get there today. Oh, no, never mind. You know what, though? Tomorrow morning I can. Does tomorrow morning work? Wait a minute. You're telling me you're going to respond so quickly you could be here first thing tomorrow morning? Again, this is unheard of, but great. All right, good. I need this, you know, because I explained to him, listen, this is holding up the sale of my house. I don't have any money. I literally, like, I have money waiting for me, but I can't touch it because the sale won't go through. Please, you got to help me out. No, don't worry about it, sir. I'll come down. Guy shows up the next day. Now, granted, he was half an hour late without a phone call, which peeved me a little bit. But as soon as he showed up, all that was wiped away when I found out that not only was he there to help me, but he actually knew my real estate attorney. And his wife used to work for the town clerk, who at the time was my cousin-in-law. So, like, he knows my family. And it's like, oh, this, you know, could this, finally, am I catching a break here? I get somebody I know who works for government who's going to come in and be able to help me out? Oh, thank you. You know, thank Odin. So this guy comes in, he checks some stuff out, signs off his little pieces of paper, then sits down and stands there and has a chat with my kids and Jen for a while. You know, really nice experience. I even talked about it in a video I put out the next day about that I finally had a positive experience with the state and I was feeling good because he left here and said, I'm going to go back to the office later today and this will be cleared as of first thing tomorrow morning. So I'm thinking, great. Finally.
The 6th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, from Thursday, June 21st through Monday, June 25th. There will be all sorts of activities in a family and adult-friendly environment. Scheduled speakers include Dana Martin, Brett Vanat, Prof. CJ, and Scott Horton. Round up your friends and family members and get them registered today at mplfest.org. That's Mike, Papa, Lima, Fest. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
We can finally get a closing date set on this house, even if my legal situation is not taken care of. At the very least, the house could be sold. I can have my stuff put in storage. Jen and the girls will be secure at the apartment. Murder Dog and I will be in the car. It's going to be rough for a little while, but at least one of the big things will be out of the way. And more importantly, we will now have money for us to live again. So I'm thinking, finally, this part's over. So I move on to other things because this man, not just some random government official who gave me his word, this guy who knew my family and was friends with them and had actually worked with them, like stood in my kitchen, looked me in the eye, shook my hand and told me this will be taken care of tomorrow morning. So I'm thinking we're good to go, baby. We could put this thing to rest. I can go worry about the mountain of other crap that's being thrown in our way. With this move and this legal stuff and everything else. So that's exactly what I do. I go back to worrying about my legal case and talking to my criminal lawyer about that situation. And then I'm still trying to figure out the situation with the permits because now okay, this violation is taken care of. We still got to get the permits taken care of for the bathroom and the fence. Now, prior to me finding out about the business violation, I knew about the business violation, but prior to knowing that it was still a problem, I had went to a contractor, or actually I had went to the contractor who had helped us build the bathroom in the first place and knew he was doing it without a permit and knew why we were doing it without a permit because he himself is a family man, has a bunch of little kids, totally understood that we were pressed for time and that it would, you know, the town could hold us up with the permit and everything because they could, you know, they could make you wait for any reason whatsoever. And he's just like, you need to get it done. We'll get it done. We'll deal with this later. So with that in mind, I went back to the same contractor and said, hey, listen, now, you know, years later, we need the permit because we're trying to sell. Since you were the one who helped us build this thing, you think you could come help me out with this? you know, just because we need plans drawn, we need the applications. I'm like, I could do the legwork, but like I need a licensed contractor, a licensed plumber, and a licensed electrician to sign off on all this stuff. If you could do that for me, that'd be great, since you're the one who helped us with it in the first place. This guy ends up telling, like, after dodging us for over a week or two, he finally ends up telling my wife that he's too busy to do it, but he's got a friend who's in the business who could handle everything for us. So, of course, we go with this guy because the other contractor has been a friend of my wife's family for years. He's done he's done other work for us here before, even before that. He's done tons of work for her family, so he's somebody who's very well trusted within the family. So when he says, hey, I've got a buddy who does the exact same thing, he will handle it for you. Again, yes, I'm assuming that it's going to get taken care of, but I've been given somebody's word of the word of somebody I trust already. So why would I think that this is going to be a problem? So the guy comes over, we talk about everything. He understands the urgency of the situation about how we're already under contract. This is, you know, we need to get this done. I want to get out of here, yada, yada. He totally understands, or at least he tells me he understands. Walks out of here, tells me he's going to write up a proposal for what needs to be done, how much will be, you know, how much I owe him, and, you know, in what interval I owe what money, all yada, yada, yada. And then he'll send it to me. We'll sign it. We'll get started. I say, great. He emails me a day later. He emails me the proposal. Everything looks good to me. A little pricey, but, you know, again, I'm like, okay, I can deal with it. We can figure a way out to do this. It's saving me all the legwork. I don't have to run back and forth to the town. I don't have to make all these copies. I'm going to save myself some money on that regard. So, okay, fine. I sent him an email back, said, hey, listen, man, it looks great. You spelled my last name wrong, though. If you send me a new copy with the correct spelling of my name, I will sign it and bring it to your office immediately, and we'll get going on this. Days went by. I never heard from the guy. I kept emailing, hey, what's going on? Never heard back from him. Finally, I found his number, and I called his office, and I'm told, oh, nobody checks those emails. I'm like, then why did he send me an email? If you send somebody an email with questions in that email, don't you, and no mention of, hey, call me instead to answer these, wouldn't any normal person assume you should just email this person back? Anyway, that's all finally cleared up because, you know, apparently nobody uses the email, but fine. Can you send me the correct copy? So, of course, the woman tells me she's going to do this. I think she's emailing it to me. She ends up sending it through the mail. So after the next day, I still don't have it. I call her back. She's like, oh, I mailed it out. I'm like, now I have to wait for it to show up through the U.S. Postal Service, a town away, which sometimes can take 6 days for some inexplicable reason. I'm just going to come down there. Can I do that instead? Oh, sure, you can come down there. So I come down. I sign the paperwork in their presence and hand them the deposit money and say, okay, let's get rocking on this because I need to get this done. Yep, we understand, sir. Don't worry about it. We have this taken care of for you. Okay, great. So again, I go back to dealing with everything else I have to deal with, figuring out the packing situation, figuring out which moving service, like all the other stuff that has to be done, plus trying to spend time with my kids. And at this point, I was still helping out some clients working-wise, so I was still working part-time. So I was still trying to do all this stuff, but here I have the contractor who I believe I can trust because he came highly recommended. And then I have the guy from the building department, which I don't like the town at all, but I've been told I can trust because he's friends with family members of mine. And like, so I think those two things are the last two things I have to worry about. Unfortunately, those were the things I should have been paying attention to the whole gosh darn time, because what ended up happening was the contractor, despite the high recommendations and the promises that he was going to get it taken care of and the understanding that he showed that how urgent my situation was, did absolutely nothing for 3 weeks. I called him after 3 weeks when I found out that everything else had been screwed up and be like, hey, I haven't heard from you. What's going on? And he like had literally done the plans for my house the day before. So he had just sat on them for 3 weeks. And then he ended up telling me that basically I wasn't a priority. Some other things had come up. And at that point, I lost my mind and yelled at him and told him to do his job. And because of that, he ended up trying to give me my money back. And then my wife called him, smoothed things out, made him understand that he had really dropped the ball here. He even admitted that he's like, oh, yeah, we screwed this up. We should have called the guy back. We really messed up here. So he agreed to continue to do the work without getting paid until the very end, even though that the contract we signed says differently. But he agreed because of his screw up. But because of that whole thing with him, he actually went into the town to apply for the permits. And he was able to physically see while he was there that the clearance for the business violation that the building inspector had told me he had done, which I was now confused because I was getting phone calls telling me that it was still there, even though it had allegedly been cleared weeks beforehand. The contractor actually found that he saw my file physically sitting on the supervisor's desk, which meant it had been sitting there for 2 weeks since the building inspector gave it to him as cleared, as promised. So that building inspector did his job. He did everything he said he was going to do. It was the next level up in administration who just sat on it and did nothing. And then, you know, I'm running out of time here, so I'm going to have to speed the end of this up. But basically what ended up happening was through all of this mess, through the contractor dropping the ball on his end, through the building inspector doing his part, but then the supervisor dropping the ball on his end, and the buyer's bank continuously trying to get the process started but finding out there's other problems in the way. When my lawyer, my real estate attorney, finally got in touch with the supervisor in question, who had ducked calls from my wife, had ducked calls from me, had claimed he had called people back, but nobody had ever received a phone call. When we finally got in touch with him only a couple days ago, he told my real estate attorney that actually the business violation had been clear this entire time. Now there was a problem because there was applications for permits. And it's like, of course there's applications for permits. You told us in no uncertain terms that we couldn't do the permits until we cleared the business violation. To which the guy said, oh, no, that's not true. So basically, we just got lied to by every single department. We talked to one department. We were told this is what we have to do. We would go and do that. And then we would call back and be like, oh, no, you had to do this first. It's like, but you told us no matter what we're told to do, the next time around, we're told we have to do something different. But it's. They act like they never told us the first thing or that we were crazy for doing the first thing. It's like, you're the ones who told us to do it. So in the end, once again, as I'm going to start wrapping up here, it is now, at the time of this recording, April 26th, 2018. I officially signed the contract to put my house under, contract somewhere towards the end of March. The cutoff date for that contract, because it's 45 business days, is May 15th. So 2.5 weeks, a little over 2.5 weeks away from now, I have to get this thing hammered out. And last I heard, my real estate attorney was going to be trying to contact the buyer's attorney in hopes that we could get this thing hammered out without the permits being done until after the fact, which I've been told is standard operating procedure in a lot of cases, but the buyers do have to agree to this. And as I told my attorney, as much as it'll kill me, if the buyers back out at this point, I don't blame them one bit, because the town of Hempstead has done everything in its power to make this the most horrible, with the exception of the one building inspector who knew my family. Everybody else has done everything in their power to make this the most impossible and horrible experience. And why anybody would want to move under the jurisdiction of this town at this point, I have no idea. I mean, I'm hoping they do, because if this deal falls through and then I still have this house and I have to start trying to sell it all over again, my family and I, the girls and Jen should be all right, because they have her family that will take care of them as long as I'm not around. That's a whole nother story for a whole nother show. But as long as I'm not around, they'll be taken care of. So, you know, it's just going to be crappy for Murder Dog and I, because we're going to end up being in a house that we literally can't afford to pay for. And then, having to start this whole process all over again, it's just going to be a nightmare. And we may end up getting evicted before that actually ends up happening. They may end up foreclosing on the house before I could pull all that off. So I'm really hoping that this ends up going through. But like I said, I don't blame these people if they back out, because the nightmare of the government around here, just like, they've been able to see it now firsthand, or at least secondhand, how insane the government is around here and the hoops they make people jump through for what's supposed to be your own property. So that's my story. And that's where we are right now. Like I said, it's April 26th, 2018, almost exactly a year from the date when this all started, as far as the legal situation and the housing situation is still ongoing. But in the end, they're all government-created problems. So what's the solution? Get government out of the darn way and let people do their stuff. Let people engage in business. Let people engage in trades. And the life will be a lot happier, folks. I guarantee it. Anyway, well, on that note, I think time's about out, so I will get wrapping up. But first of all, I do want to thank everybody for listening. This was obviously my first attempt at a solo fiend show. And, I know I can rant a lot, so I figured I'd be able to pull this off, and I think I did. So I hope you guys enjoyed listening. I hope everybody now has a better understanding of the insanity that I'm going through, and I will be back next time. So for everybody, thanks again. More of us, go to freedomfiends.com. Worms.